Today, your Science Magazine of the Air brings you a chapter from the human adventure, a dramatic story of spooks and superstitions, and their haunting effects on the lives of man down through the ages. The story of witchcraft.
Round and round the boiling pot, the witch's brew is steaming hot. Round and round the witch's goal.
Gather now and place your token. Do as I, the devil's spoken. Round and round the witches go.
Evil charms and an evil plan. Evil acts to curse all men. Round and round the witches go.
Round and round, stir the pot.
Stir it cold, stir it hot.
Give it all the stuff you've got.
You may be good, but we are not.
The story of witchcraft is a black thread in the fabric of history. Woven of superstition and fear, its pattern is the pattern of ignorance, of men seek for explanations that could not be answered without science, that could not be understood without the urge to search for truth, that could not be comprehended without education. Thus, the story of witchcraft begins long ago. Older than written language, older than the wheel, are the demons men feared.
It is Manlet again. He rumbles loud.
Yes, he is once more alive and hungry. See his fiery breath.
What shall we do?
Feed him what he has always eaten. Feed him a child before he destroys us.
A child sacrificed and the demon was calmed. The fire god fed and satisfied. Centuries pass. Look now at ancient Egypt. Advanced and modern in its time, its people knew of demons and they feared.
Thy enemy may be caused pain if you make a wax image of him and treat it cruelly. You may avert the evil eye if you encamp the sacred words. Beware of the demons as you would beware of plague.
The centuries roll on, and Rome straddles half the known world.
How augurs the future, citizen?
It augurs ill, I hear. The legions face cruel enemies, and the signs for victory are bad. All bad.
I am told that lightning did not flash in the sky.
And no birds appeared in flight.
Yet an owl screeched in the square at midnight. But that is bad, too.
Down the concourse of the years, the records interpreted by modern university scholars like Wallace Notestein of the University of Minnesota and George Lyman Kittredge of Harvard University are strewn these tales of fears, superstition, demons, and magical signs. The idea that evil spirits war against man grows. And because people can be seen and felt and spirits cannot, the accusing finger is sometimes pointed at a man or a woman.
He's a slave of the devil.
She's a witch.
He uttered a curse and it will kill us.
And the black thread in the fabric of history is woven into a wider pattern and spreads its design over Europe, knitted more strongly in each century. And then in the 16th century came the full terror of the devil, the age of witches. And what had gone before was only a prelude. Mankind, now on the threshold of the modern world, went suddenly berserk with terror of the devil. The studies of Henry C. Lee of the University of Pennsylvania, one of the most penetrating works of scholarship on medieval witchcraft, reveal where before there was one demon to fear, now there were 50. For one evil spell, there were 500. For one witch, there were 1,000. In the local tavern, they said,
our doors close at midnight. Then is the witching hour.
In the castle of the Lord,
here is the bowl of milk, milady.
Good. Put it by the door. It'll keep the demons out.
By the poor man's fireside.
Oh, John, a big black rat.
A rat? No, woman, 'tis a demon, sure. Light the candle, scare off the devil.
The evil grew and grew until all of Europe was enmeshed in the black thread of witchcraft. And now no longer was the witch always alone. A new cult began. A mysterious order, an order of darkness, came into being. It was called the Cult of Satan. It had self-appointed leaders, demagogues exploiting fear, giving status and importance and excitement to secret members. Read the critical work of Johann Weyer of the University of Bonn, 1568, reporting on the phenomenon of witchcraft to his patron, the Duke of Cleves. And you will know that in innumerable towns throughout the wide reaches of Europe, there gathered the devil worshippers at the witch's coven.
I will tell you what I saw. I hid in the brush and watched the cult of Satan. The night was dark, except for the dead light of the moon, shivering on the frosted grass. I held my hand over my mouth so no one would see my breath. At the witching hour, the people came to the hilltop, to the witch's coven. There were 12 of them, and they huddled together by a black stone near a dead tree and talked. But I could not hear what they said. Now one of them, a man, stands up, and this time I hear what he says.
It is almost time. It is almost time for Satan. We are gathered for the Eschbach. Satan demands it. Have you come prepared to worship? Good. All things are ready. Light the torches. Satan cometh.
Now look. The torches are lit. They hold them high. The fire leaps against the black night. The shadows tremble on the ground. Why did she scream? Have they seen me?
My people, my demons, my witches.
It is the devil. It is Satan. God save me. He is dressed like all the pictures I have seen of him. His face is like the devil's face.
Take the potion from the fire and drink of it. Worship me. I am the devil. I hold the power of blackness. I am your master.
From the Pyrenees to further Scotland, there are people who gather in the mystic rites, the Witches' Coven, 12 and the Devil, the magic number 13. But though history shows the black thread of witchcraft as a wide, cruel pattern in the 16th century, there appears also a design of action against the excesses of fear and superstition which held the old world in terror. In England, Henry VIII, strong-willed, caustic, called Bluff King Hal by his people, holds a session with his counselors of state.
Well, my lords, can't you speak? I've had the reports read to you.
But, Majesty...
But, Majesty...
Have the witches got you, too? Are you under a spell?
No, Majesty.
You?
No, sire.
Any of you?
No, Majesty.
Well, then, since you're not under a spell, am I to think other than that your brains are weak? This witchery infests the land. The devil's rule threatens my rule in 1,000 places. The devil take the devil. And you, my lords, have no countermeasures to suggest.
Majesty, we deplore the condition also. And there are good folk all over England who share this sentiment.
Many town officials have admonished their people not to succumb to foolish conduct, sire.
Moreover, Majesty, this is a temporary thing. It will likely pass soon.
Lord, you underestimate the problem. Do these reports from all over the realm leave you unaffected? What meaneth it if the good folk deplore? Have they power to back their sentiments? What result can be expected from the rebuke of town officials? The answer, my lords, is nothing. There is nothing against witchery but weak kings. So be it. Now I, Henry, will act. I am the king, the power, the might of England. I will smash this witchery. I will destroy this devil's work.
And Bluff King Hal recognizes in the name of the crown that there are subjects who have the power to do evil, and enacts stern measures against them.
All subjects accused of trafficking with magics of the devil shall be taken as witches, to be prosecuted in the name of the king and dealt with according to law.
You are listening to The Story of Witchcraft, another chapter from the Notebooks of Science on the Human Adventure. What was the effect of this legislation? How did it influence the terror of witchcraft? The history of events is fascinating to observe. Scholars like Margaret Alice Murray of the University of London point out that for the first time, legal authority and judicial power were arrayed against witchery. It is late afternoon, the year 1529. Children return, not from schools, but from the fields with a herd of cattle. And a small child runs to her mother in great excitement.
Oh, Mother, Mother, listen to me.
Not now, Laurie. Go inside and clean your hands.
But, Mother, I have something to tell you. Listen to me.
All right. What is it?
I was minding old Brownie, and she strayed away. And I ran after her, and I saw Squire Walton. He was doing something strange. And I crept closer, and I saw him drawing things in the dirt. And I got afraid and ran away. He was calling the devil, Mother, like Granny Harris says. Mother, he's a witch, isn't he?
Laurie, are you sure?
Oh, yes, Mother. He was calling the devil. I saw him.
Laurie, my baby. You might have passed a spell on you. Come, the judge will hear of this.
And I was minding the cows, and old Brownie strayed away, and I spied Squire Walsh by the big oak tree. He had a big black stick, and he was drawing in the dirt. And there was a lot of smoke, and a man jumped out of the bushes. And I ran away and told Mother all about it. He's a witch. I know he is.
The word witch was enough for the judge. All the evidence necessary for a trial. A trial that was to follow in a week's time.
Silence! The king's justice comes.
Prisoner will face the bar. James Walsh. Been called to face the charge of witchcraft. Before any testimony is given, how do you plead? Guilty or not?
I am innocent. I have done nothing.
The prisoner is seated now. The court calls the first witness, and Nora Martin faces the bench to tell of her daughter's experience. And little Laurie Martin stands to give testimony.
Like Mother said, I was playing in the field when I saw Squire Walsh hiding behind the big oak. He was all dressed in black. And he had a big black stick with a snake's head on the end. And he was moving on the ground, and the snake was biting the brown rat that was there. Then the stick turned to fire and smoke, and a big black man with horns and a tail came out. And he and the squire talked, and I ran home and told Mother. And I know he's a witch. I do.
The judge quiets the courtroom, and then a stream of witnesses appear to testify to the squire's guilt. No, there was no lack of witnesses that day. It seemed as if every man, woman, and child in the vicinity had seen the squire performing some devilish act at one time or another. The evidence mounted rapidly.
And then I saw the fish jump right into his boat. The sure sign of a witch.
Why, Mayor developed a lame leg that night, and I knew the squire did it, just like a witch.
And by my dead mother, I recognized the mark of a witch. And only Squire Walsh had been by. Burn him, he's a witch.
Squire Walsh, the evidence is damning. The law allows you one more chance. Confess to your pact with Satan.
But they are all lies. I am no witch. I have no pact with Satan.
It is for your good that you confess your crimes, or you'll be put to the torture.
Now the front of the court is cleared, and from another room is brought the articles of torture. There's the rack for tearing limbs, and the iron boot for crushing feet. And the ladder for a man's arms so weights may be attached to his legs. And the fire and the red-hot pincers. And all the other devices needed to make stubborn witches confess. The crowd watches with avid interest as Squire Walsh is finally dragged to the heavy oak bench before the judge.
Squire Walsh, will you confess?
I am guilty, I admit it.
Good. Now tell everything. When did you make compact with Satan?
I was walking in the forest. I came across the devil sitting on a tree stump. He promised everything I wanted, and I signed a pact with him in my blood. Then I went home. The next day I found a little brown dog in the yard.
Ah, true sign. The devil's imp. Go on.
I kept the dog, and I could make rainstorms and even fly with a broomstick. The devil saw it.
Go on, go on.
But Squire Walsh had fainted again. He did this several times before he was able to make a full confession. Finally, the judge leaned back, and the hushed courtroom awaited sentence.
Squire Walsh, You, of your own free will, have made full confession to the evil practice of witchcraft. As the king's judge, I now pass sentence on you as prescribed by law. You are convicted of the crime of witchery and will die accordingly. Tomorrow morning, you will be burnt at the stake. May God have mercy on your soul.
An innocent man condemned as a witch. Here was an effect that King Henry and the governments of Europe, who also placed the power of the law against witchery, had not foreseen. The terror did not abate. The trials jammed the courts, and the courts became, in a manner of speaking, classrooms for the propagation of fear and superstition. And people were not unwilling to accuse their enemies of witchcraft, or to use the threat of accusation.
You wanted me, Mum?
Yes, Joan. Cook tells me you've not been doing your work.
Oh, a girl's got to have a little fun now and then.
I know, Joan. You get paid for your work, and you have to do it.
And if I don't, Mum, what then?
Why, you'll have to go.
But I like it here, Mum, and I intend to stay.
But if you don't behave, I'll have to tell the master.
Will you now? I don't think so.
And why not?
Because I'll tell him a few things I know myself.
Things you know, Joan. Such as what?
Oh, you can't fool me. I know all about the spells you've made and the witch charms you have.
Witch charms? Spells?
So if you tell the master that I've been bad, I'll tell him that you're a witch.
I'm not a witch. Joan, how can you say such a thing?
Well, I won't if you let me stay. Oh, that's the way it is.
Yes, Mum.
And you will let me stay, won't you, Mum? I know you wouldn't want to be known as a witch. Not these days, Mum. Now, would you?
Blackmail, and effective too, for the fear of being called a witch was real. But a phenomenon woven so deep in the society of the time sooner or later evoked the attention, the curiosity, the study of men whose minds were not shackled by ignorance. It was Michael Montaigne, student of the classics, one of the great intellects of the 16th century, whose essays even today are studied for their wisdom and content.
I think it easier to believe that men should lie or deceive themselves than that such marvels as witchcraft be true.
There was Baruch Spinoza, the Dutch scholar who refused the chair of philosophy at the University of Heidelberg, lest it curb his complete independence of thought.
I can only reject as old wives' fables, unworthy of investigation, the stories of witches and demons.
There was Francis Bacon of Trinity College, England, statesman, scientist, scholar.
Men must not rashly believe the confessions of witches, nor even the evidence against them. For witches are imaginative, and believe oft times that they do what they in fact do not. And lastly, we must remember that the facts of the case are not always scientific.
The facts of the case are not always scientific. Here was a word and an idea that could undo the spells of witchery, that could free men's minds. The word, scientific. It is a word more powerful than all the incantations on a dark hill at midnight. An idea more potent than any brew cooked from horsehair in a dead thief's blood. To be scientific is to be concerned with facts, with observable demonstrations, with the cause and effect of phenomena. Let us therefore be instructed by Sir Francis Bacon when we consider witchcraft.
You can tell a witch by the devil's mark.
Yes, and since practically everyone has a birthmark of some sort, there was no lack of witches.
To prove someone is a witch, swim them.
Sure, tie left hand to right foot and toss them into the nearest pond. If they float, it's the sign of a witch, all right. And if they don't, well, the mob is satisfied. There was no lack of witches.
Look for personal imps given all witches by the devil.
And since the Middle Ages swarmed with rats and mice, it wasn't hard to find the imp. There was no lack of witches.
If there be no free confession, torture must be used.
Break enough bones in a man's body and he'll confess to anything. There was no lack of witches. But these are modern analyses of ancient fears, the comments of an age of science upon an age of superstition. The question is, how did man first begin to unshackle himself from the web of witchcraft? Who were the men who first applied scientific methods of observation to the cult of the devil? They are the men we should honor, because our modern knowledge, which permits us to smile at the foolish fears of 400 years ago, would not be possible without their courageous acts. Here, then, another case based upon the findings and research of scholarship. The case of Genois of Lyon, France, in the year 1673.
Monsieur, we have now the case of Genois, self-confessed to witchcraft.
And what manner of evil does she claim?
All sorts, monsieur, but mainly the power to ride to meetings of blackness on a broomstick.
Broomstick?
Oui.
Really? Have her come forward.
Genois, come here.
Yes, monsieur.
Girl, you claim power from the devil, I hear.
Oh, yes, monsieur. I have.
And pray tell me, do you ride to meet him on a broomstick?
I do, monsieur. Always.
Can you do it here? Now? Can you ride away on a broomstick?
I can.
Fine. The court would see this done. Here, bring a broom and give it to the girl. She will demonstrate her master's power.
The girl casually took the broomstick and prepared for her flight. From her pocket, she drew a pot of evil-looking paste and rubbed it on her body. Then she swayed and slowly settled on one of the rough wooden benches while all watched.
What is she doing?
I have no idea, monsieur, but I wish she would get started.
After a few moments, the onlookers noticed a glazed look in her eyes.
She looks a little blurry to me, monsieur.
Shh. She seems to prepare for some great ordeal. Watch her.
An ordeal it was. For more than an hour, the girl remained in a deep trance. From time to time, moaning slightly and writhing on the bench.
Shall I awaken her, monsieur?
No. This is too interesting. Let us see how long it will continue.
Continue it did, until with a convulsive cry, the girl shook herself off the bench and opened her eyes.
And did you have a nice trip, my dear?
I did, monsieur. And I met the devil far away. In Paris, I think.
I think not, my dear. You never even moved a foot. And as for flying, that was all in your mind. As I think are all the stories that come from this witchcraft.
That was the answer, and witchcraft was doomed. For slowly over the decades, the courts came to suspect that which could not be demonstrated or proved. And this attitude, this state of mind that questioned sharply, flowered as education flowered, as schools grew, as men of science began to probe and investigate. They learned that microbes soured wine, not a witch's curse. They learned how storms are borne by winds and pressures, not by a magic gesture. They learned that the devil's mark had a medical, not an old wives' explanation. Sanitation was introduced, and the demon's imps, rats, and mice began to disappear. As man began to explore the unknown with knowledge, with science, with industrial development, witchcraft and superstition were doomed. Or were they?
Is the soup all right, Henry?
Mm-mm. Best I ever tasted, Martha. Could use a little salt, though.
Here. Have some. Oh. Oh, it's spilled. Bad luck.
No. Just throw a pinch over your shoulder. It'll be all right then.
See? Even now.
Oh, one case. Nothing to it.
No? Listen.
Come on, Jerry. We'll be late.
I'm right with you. Hey, watch out for the ladder. Bad luck if you go under it.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Here's another.
Boy, what a rain. Here, open this umbrella and dry it out while I change my clothes.
Oh, no, Joe.
Why not?
Never open an umbrella in the house. Don't you know it means something terrible will happen?
Well, how do you like that?
A dizzy dame. She's just ignorant, like you said on the program. How anybody could be superstitious.
That's right. Cigarette?
Sure, thanks.
Ed?
Yes, don't mind if I do.
Okay. Light?
After you.
Ed, light?
Mm-hmm.
And here's your light, mister.
you know, three and a match? Of course, I don't believe it, you understand, but...
The story of witchcraft is a chapter from the human adventure and brought to you by your Science Magazine of the Air. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.